Hello, it's Claire here. If you live near Bristol, there's still time to grab a ticket to Money Clinic's live recording at the Bristol Festival of Economics on Thursday, November the 16th, where I'll be talking inflation, money and markets with Sarah O'Connor, the FT columnist, and Susanna Streeter, financial expert from Hargreaves Lansdown. Go to ft.com/Bristol to get your ticket. There's a link in today's show notes. As for today's episode, we're rerunning a cracker from our back catalogue that first aired in July. The world of investments is unhelpfully full of three-letter acronyms, and if you've been looking into investing in the past few years, you can't have missed one that comes up time and time again. I'm talking about ETFs, or exchange-traded funds. Buying into one has been one of the biggest investment trends of the past decade. But if you think ETFs, WTF, this show is for you. Welcome to Money Clinic, the weekly podcast from the Financial Times about personal finance and investing. I'm Claire Barrett, the FT's consumer editor. In this episode, we're going to be demystifying ETFs. Should you invest in one? And how do you go about choosing which ETFs to invest in? And what sort of charges can you expect? I'm joined by two experts in the studio. Firstly, Lynn Hutchinson, who's head of ETF and index solutions at Charles Stanley. Lovely to have you with us today, Lynn.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And I'm also joined by my colleague, Dave Baxter, who is the funds editor at the Investors Chronicle magazine, the sister publication of the FT. Welcome, Dave.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, my usual disclaimer on Money Clinic. We are going to be talking about investments and investing, but these are opinions. It's not intended as individual advice or indeed a recommendation that you should buy or not buy a particular investment. You need to do your own research, as always. But Dave, let's start with you. Now, for somebody who's never heard of an ETF and is thinking WTF, what are they? What's your explanation?
So basically, an ETF is kind of a portfolio or a basket of stocks or different kind of investments. So you're putting your money into that and you're getting exposure to a whole range of different investments normally focused on a sort of established market. So something like the FTSE 100 in the UK or the S&P 500 in the US.
Mm. Now, we're getting into kind of alphabet soup of ETFs, aren't we? So you've got the different indexes around the world that you can buy into, but you've also got some bits of jargon that really describes how these kind of investments work, whether they pay an income to investors, whether they're authorised by a particular jurisdiction. We're going to be covering some of those acronyms later on in the show, but just give people an idea of the kind of brand names, the sort of companies who are making these envelopes or ETFs full of different shares for investors to easily buy.
Yep. So you have, in terms of the actual indices, the things that the funds will invest in, one of the really big names is MSCI. And they basically compose some of these big, lists of stocks to cover a given region. So for example, they construct the MSCI World Index, which covers lots of kind of different global stocks. Another index composer is the FTSE, as I mentioned. You have the FTSE 100, the FTSE All Share, and then you also have S&P. And I suppose another kind of brand to mention is iShares, which is part of BlackRock, which people may have heard of, which is a fund management giant. And it's worth looking for these kind of established names because there has been a kind of first mover advantage in the industry, and some of the more established names have kind of taken in lots of money. They have really big funds, and big funds are generally speaking better just because they can be cheaper to trade and it kind of reduces your overall cost of investing.
Okay. Now, you've just written an article for the Investors Chronicle. People can read it for free online if they register using the link in the show notes today. And you have looked at the top 50 ETFs that you and a panel of experts, including Lynn, have picked that you think investors could use as the basis to form their own research about how they might build their own portfolio using ETFs as the building blocks. And again, I like that analogy, the building blocks. Tell us a bit more about that.
So, yeah, we think ETFs are really good as kind of the building blocks of your portfolio. They can give you those kind of main exposures. Like I said, you might want US equities or you might want UK exposure, and then you can perhaps fiddle on the sides and do more specific investments, whether you pick your own shares or whether you buy a so-called active fund where someone kind of tries to pick the best stocks. But in terms of the list, we have basically tried to identify those funds that are kind of cheapest, that track the most relevant index, and as I mentioned, have things like quite significant size in order to reduce your overall cost of investing. But we, for the last few years, we've kind of broken the list into three main categories. So the first one is core. So core ETFs are, I've mentioned some of those really established markets like the S&P 500. And, you know, that can be a really big part of your portfolio. And those are quite simple ETFs. You want to go for big names. You want to go for something that's very cheap. And normally with those ETFs, you shouldn't expect to pay something more than, say, 0.1% in terms of a headline fee. So it should be pretty cheap stuff. The next category is satellites. So this is more specific kinds of funds. So this might be a fund that deliberately targets dividends. It might be a fund that targets smaller companies. And then we have a very small niche category, which covers commodities. Say you want your gold exposure, say you want exposure to oil, and also covers, they've been, I suppose, quite in vogue in recent years, thematic ETFs. So they focus on trends such as the aging population.
I loved that one.
Yeah. So that has lots of, for example, healthcare stocks and financial stocks as well. But yeah, that's the structured list. So core should generally be your kind of first port of call because those are your main exposures. And then when you want something a bit more interesting, a bit more specific to your needs, you can go for more esoteric ETFs.
Brilliant. Now, we talk a lot on the Money Clinic podcast about passive investing, investing when you're tracking an index and using index funds to do that. But how are ETFs different?
So it's basically a structural difference. So ETFs have shares that are traded on the stock market, whereas what we call an index fund will have units, and you're ultimately giving a fund manager money and they're giving you a unit, but that's not traded on a stock market. But I would say in terms of the practical difference for an investor, there are probably two things to consider. One is, if you're going for an index fund and you want to buy and sell, that can sometimes take a few days. There is a bit of a wait. Whereas with an ETF, because you're simply trading on the stock market, that can be much quicker. So if you do want to quickly make a decision, if you think the S&P is going to, you know, rise by 20% because X development has happened, then maybe an ETF is quicker, but it can tempt you to trade more, which can incur more costs. And the second important difference relates to charges. So particularly if you look at the more established platforms, say something like Hargreaves Lansdown, they will levy different platform charges depending on whether you're holding what they call funds, which in this case would be index funds, or if you're holding shares, which would be ETFs or investment trusts if you're thinking about active funds.
Sure. So you just need to be really aware of what are the fees that your platform charges and for what.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to pay a lot of attention to that, how platforms charge differently, and of course, how much they actually are charging.
Okay, well, we'll be delving much deeper into the world of ETFs with Dave and Lynn shortly. But first, let's hear from Serenya. She got in touch with Money Clinic because she's keen to know more about investing in ETFs. She's 38, originally from India, but now lives in Vienna with her husband and young child.
I'm an engineer, generally not afraid of mathematics or numbers, but until I think 4 or 5 years ago, I basically did nothing with my money other than keep it in my bank account.
And when did you start investing? What led you to do that?
So I moved to Vienna in 2014. And a year after that, my bank contacted me and said, you have quite a lot of money in your bank, so can you invest in something?
Now, that call prompted Serenia to read up about the stock market on FT.com, and she's now aiming to move the money that she's built up in her long-term savings into investments. And the way she's looking to do that is by using ETFs. But as Serenia is finding, there are actually a lot to choose from.
Say I want to buy an ETF tracking a certain index, and I find that there are 20 ETFs that do the same thing. Mm-hmm. How do I find out which one I should pick? Is it the total expense ratio, or is it something else that makes one ETF better than the other?
And is the cheapest always the best?
Oh, yeah. I assumed it should be, but good to know.
Well, Lynn, we'll be hearing your insider knowledge shortly. But firstly, Dave, let's stick with you. So if listeners like Serenia have decided that ETFs are the way that they want to build up their portfolio, what kind of things do they need to consider before they start building it up? I mean, the platform that they're going to use seems an obvious place to start.
Yeah, so the platform's very important, and you can do research online into kind of the different charges they will have on ETFs and the kind of level of choice that there is available when it comes to picking ETFs. So that's a very important first step. Then when you've chosen a platform, you would need to set up your account. And in the UK, for example, you could start a stocks and shares ISA, or you could have a so-called, SIP, self-invested personal pension, if that's more the kind of area you want to go into. Once you've kind of handled those practical elements, you perhaps need to think more about portfolio construction and, what the industry calls asset allocation. So that's basically the exposure you have to different markets, different geographies, and to an extent to different, what they call asset classes, which is things like stocks versus bonds versus commodities. As we discussed, you have core ETFs. They're probably your first port of call because you want to get those kind of exposures to those main markets, from the US to Asia to the UK. And once you've done that, and that's the kind of bulk of your portfolio, you can then start thinking about more specific things that you want to do within your portfolio. But speaking of asset allocation, I think it is worth noting that when we talk about these big markets, there are some kind of skews, there are some idiosyncrasies, is perhaps a polite way to put it. With the S&P 500, for example, that has done enormously well in the last decade, that has trounced all the other markets. But there are valid concerns about the fact that it's so reliant on the big tech stocks, things like Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and so on. If you look at, for example, an S&P 500 tracker, then the two biggest constituents recently were kind of Apple and Microsoft, and they made up something like 14-15% of that fund.
So you think you're buying into a diversified fund of 500 different US shares, but actually two of them account for getting on for a fifth of the exposure. So if Apple's new virtual reality headset bombs, then that could have an outsized impact on the performance of that ETF, despite the number of funds within the envelope.
Yeah, so we hail the kind of diversification benefits of ETFs, but you do have to recognize the fact that it's not always as diversified as you think. An important point, a related point, is about the kind of global ETFs you might buy. So the MSCI World Index sounds wonderfully international and global, but actually, if you had looked recently, then it would have something like between, I think it's 2/3 or maybe even approaching 70% in the US markets.
Wow.
And then you look at the US market, and as we discussed, that's so dominated by those few big stocks.
Okay, Lynn, let's bring you in here. Now, you described yourself in the podcast Green Room earlier as an ETF geek. But tell us what you get up to in your job.
My day-to-day role is selecting ETFs and index funds for our investment managers and community to use in client portfolios or for clients to select to use themselves.
So you've got a keen nose when it comes to sniffing out ETFs that look good value and those that don't pass the test.
That's hopefully the case.
Well, Serenia has been surprised about the choice of ETFs that's available out there. And from your perspective, how can investors go about selecting which of these funds to invest in?
When looking at ETFs, if you're a European investor, it's important to know that for a lot of the US domiciled ETFs, as a UK retail investor or an individual investor, you can't actually invest into these US domiciled ETFs. So they're ones that you can move out of your selection straight away.
So then, if you're investing from the UK or in Europe, what you want to look out for is another acronym, UCITS. That stands for Undertakings for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities. And Lynn, that basically means...
that if you're an individual investor, particularly in the UK, that they're eligible for investment into your portfolio.
Excellent.
They're regulated investments.
Okay.
So you can narrow it down to then. And then the first thing you need to do is look at the indexes that are being tracked by the ETFs.
And how could an investor like Serenia look under the bonnet and find out what's actually in an ETF?
Well, the good thing with ETFs is they're very transparent. So the big providers of ETFs, their websites are great and their web pages for each of the ETFs are very good.
They have a fund fact sheet.
There's a fund fact sheet, but they also give transparency that you can download a full list of the holdings. You can see exactly how much weight you've got in sectors, how much weight you've got in individual holdings and in countries.
So Serenia said she views ETFs as a safe and easy way of investing without a great deal of knowledge. But Lynn, you've got some tips for people who are looking at different ETFs so that they can compare the relative attributes. Now, the first thing that you think investors should look at when comparing similar ETFs are the fees and charges. Now, often another three-letter acronym is used to describe these, which is...
an OCF.
Okay, and tell me
or
what
that is. Or a TER. So some people call it a TER, some people call it an OCF.
Decipher for us, please.
So there's an ongoing charges, which is an OCF, and the TER is the total expense ratio. They're effectively the same thing.
Okay, and how is this expressed?
So this is expressed in a percentage. So a FTSE 100 ETF can have an OCF or a TER of 0.07%.
So that's a very small amount.
Yeah, 0.07% on the value of your investments you will pay within the ETF.
Okay. Now, obviously that's very cheap, but then if you've got lots of different funds that you're putting against each other, and that's the column, if you like, that you're comparing, very easy to see, one might be charging 0.09. But your point is, don't always assume that the cheapest is the best. There are other things you should be looking at too.
Yeah. And one of the major ones is looking at how the ETF tracks against its index. So effectively the performance. So how they should show on the websites or the fact sheets when you look and see what the performance has been is the ETF should track exactly the same as what the index return is, less the OCF. So yeah, if the FTSE ETF has returned 1% and the index itself has returned 1.07%, then that's good because all the difference is the OCF of 0.07%.
But if it's very different, then again, could be a warning.
It's a warning sign, yes.
Okay, now let's hear a little bit more from Serenia. Now, she lives in Austria, so her income is in euros, but she invested in some dollar-denominated ETFs and found she was getting charged an awful lot for the exchange rate.
In every transaction, I lose money because I have to pay this foreign exchange commission. Is it possible at all to avoid this fee?
Finally, Serenia had a question around dividends.
I've noticed that there are two listings for the same index that I wish to track offered by the same ETF provider. One is dividend paying and another one is accumulating. Don't know what the difference is.
Okay, Lynn and Dave, it's over to you again. Let's start off with this question of foreign exchange because obviously Serenia is in Austria, but most of our listeners will be in the UK. Why are so many ETFs listed in dollars and what are the factors that investors have to consider with these extra currency charges?
No, it depends on what platform or bank you're using to trade. And you know, a lot of platforms will give you the option of whether you want to pay for that trade in euros or sterling or dollars. It's just restrictions on the platforms or the banks rather than the actual products itself.
Mm.
You look for better banks to pay more interest on your cash. This is similar to that. This is your money. You need to do your due diligence and make sure you're getting value for money.
Well, that's the exchange rate issue dealt with. But Dave, I noticed in your top 50 ETFs list, some of the options were currency hedged. So UK investors, say, buying a US fund could try and reduce some of the volatility. Explain how that might work.
Yeah, that's very important. So currency movements can kind of knock your portfolio around a bit, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. So say you're a sterling investor holding, again, an S&P 500 ETF, then if sterling strengthened against the dollar, that's actually a negative because it diminishes the sterling value of that dollar return. So it lessens what you're getting if you're not hedged.
So it's like when you're coming back from holiday.
Yeah.
You've got dollars on the aeroplane, and then when you convert them back into pounds when you get home, it's not as good a deal as when you first went out on holiday. Well, that's the way I think of it anyway.
So personally, and some people disagree with me, but I always think that it's actually better to do the slightly boring alternative approach of diversifying by geography, because in theory, over time, those currency fluctuations should simply even themselves out.
Mm.
But I suppose if you do have a really strong view and you think sterling's going to, you know, rocket or that kind of thing, then that could be an option.
Now, let's talk about charges more broadly. Now, of course, one of the reasons that investors are attracted to ETFs is because the cost of investing is very low. They're a cheap way of building up a portfolio. But Dave, there are some fees and charges that investors still, nevertheless, need to keep a close eye on.
Yeah, so the main two things are the kind of funds fee and the platforms fee as well. That can make a big difference to your end returns, what you're getting charged. But there are some other costs. There's, you know, transaction costs, which relate to kind of the costs of trading. You can look for that, but you need to dig around a bit. And that's why there are things like, for example, our top 50 ETFs list, because we go through the whole kind of market and what's on offer with a panel of very experienced, you know, experts. And, you know, we look for things like, as I mentioned, the kind of bigger funds, which should offer those economies of scale and should be kind of cheaper to invest in.
Now, finally, let's move on to this topic of dividends. Serenya's noticed that for lots of the ETFs she's interested to invest in, there are two different types. One labelled income, which pays a dividend, and one that's labelled accumulation. INC and ACC, to use the three-letter acronyms that often flash up on fund websites. Now, Lynn, could you have a go at explaining the difference between INC and ACC, please?
Yes, of course. So dividends, or as they're known, income share classes, pay the investor distribution yields, which has been received from the underlying equities or bonds on a regular basis. And these are usually paid out to investors on a quarterly or six-monthly basis. Accumulation share classes reinvest the distribution yields received from the underlying equities or bonds back into the ETF or the fund rather than paying out to the investors.
Okay, so if you wanted to be taking an income from your investments, maybe in retirement,
use the income.
You would use the income, so you'd get money paid out to you every quarter or every 6 months. But if you're somebody who's investing for the long term, like Serenya is, then the accumulation would be better because those dividends are being reinvested into buying more stocks. So that should help your investment compound over time.
Yeah, if you don't need the income now, rather than getting drips and drabs, then it's probably best to use the accumulation share class.
Fantastic. And finally, Lynn, have you got any other ETF tips for listeners that you'd like to leave us with?
My main points would be to make sure as an investor to do your due diligence on the ETF or the product that you've chose, the index that it's tracking, but also the platforms as well. Make sure the platform's the right one for you, that you're not being charged too much, and that it holds the investments that you're looking to invest in.
And what about you, Dave?
Well, we do our list kind of every year, and perhaps that is generally a good point at which to review your portfolio. Look at it every 12 months, look at the ETFs you're holding, Do you have much more in the US now because it's performed well? Is it as kind of balanced as you want?
And you need to readjust.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you need to sort of recalibrate things?
Well, thank you so much there to Lynn Hutchinson from Charles Stanley and to David Baxter from The Investors Chronicle.
And thanks for having me, Claire.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for Money Clinic with me, Claire Barrett, this week, and we hope you like what you've heard. If you did, spread the word and leave us a review. We're always looking to chat with people about their money issues for the show, so if you're interested in being part of a future episode and are looking for some expert advice, then email us, our address, money@ft.com. You could also take a peek at our website, ft.com/money, grab a copy of the FT Weekend newspaper, or follow me on Instagram. I'm at Claire B. Money Clinic was produced in London by Persis Love. Our sound engineer is Breen Turner and our editor is Manuela Saragosa. You heard original tunes this week by Metaphor Music. And finally, our usual disclaimer, the Money Clinic podcast is a general discussion around financial topics and does not constitute an investment recommendation or individual financial advice. For that, you'll need to find an independent financial advisor. That is the small print for now. See you back here next week. Goodbye.